At Grainger, we're for the ones who specialize in saving the day and for the ones who've mastered the art of keeping business moving. We offer industrial-grade supplies for every industry with same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders, all backed by real people ready to help. So you can get the right answers and products right when you need them. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, let's start with a joke. Who was the very first person who ever used any type of technology? You ready? Moses. He had two tablets that were connected to the cloud. Yeah, all right. A few years ago, you would have been like, what? I don't get it. Why should that even be funny? The reason is that technology has its own lingo. We put things in the cloud. We digitize books. Rankify. As in, I got a new job, so I was managed to rankify a new house. Or how about breadcrumbs? We leave them all over the internet. High res, use that in a sentence. The game was so high res, I actually thought I was there. We live in the Apple or Android ecosystem. We post on social and we take selfies. So let's shift gears to your privacy and security and the hackers and the scammers who just want your money. The cybersecurity industry has its own lingo too. Dark web, white hat, black hat, VPN, exploit, breach, firewall, penetration testing, malware, bots, rootkits, DDoS, and more. If you're going to live in this tech world, as we are all doing, you need to know the cybersecurity lingo too. That's why Itay Mayor is joining us. He's one of the world's leading experts on cybersecurity. So coming up, the top 10 cybersecurity terms you need to know and how to protect yourself from all the threats. And in just a second, a really, really bad cybersecurity joke you're not going to want to miss.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, it's Kim Commando Explains. You probably got the Moses joke, but since we're talking about cybersecurity, here's another one. Are you ready? A hacker was talking to his friends over chat and said, I wrote a bot script to get past the web security. And get this, so far, it's managed to evade CAPTCHA. Oh, I know. I hope you have your thinking caps on because we're going to school you on cybersecurity terms that you're going to hear or maybe even use. I'm going to throw the words out and then Itay Mayor is going to break each one down. Are you ready? Okay, so let's start at the very beginning. 2FA/OTP, right? Two-factor authentication, a one-time password. How would you define that?
So two-factor authentication, one-time password, or sometimes also referred to as MFA, multi-factor authentication, is simply a way for organizations or services to authenticate you. And it all starts from the three forms of authentication: something you know, something you have, or something that you are. And that's why you sometimes see two-factor authentication, because you need two of those factors: know, have, or are, in order to authenticate somebody. Now, this all might sound like, hey, it's all around computers, but actually, everybody has been using two-factor authentication for forever, right? You go to an ATM, you're using a card, something you have, and a password, the number, something you know, so two-factor authentication, right? You go to an airport, you hand the TSA or Border Patrol your passport. Something you have, your passport, and they look at the picture and they validate that it is indeed something you are, the same person. And that's where also one-time password comes in, and that is a way to send you each time a different password, right? We've seen this both in mail and mobile devices, where there's a randomly generated number which is being sent to you in order to validate you. And while I'm not going to go into different services and everything in these definitions, I think it's important to note, if you have an opportunity to use a one-time password for authentication, use it. It makes life much harder for threat actor to become you, to authenticate as you, because that password is generated every time differently, and so they would need access to your email or mobile device in order to overcome that authentication.
And see, a lot of people, they say, well, you know, it's just not worth my time. Okay, but it is worth the time. Now, of course, we have two-factor authentication that sets up on all our accounts, in which, by the way, folks, if you're not sure how to do that, we have the steps over at Commando.com. But, you know, there's been a real movement against two-factor authentication because the whole idea is that they're going to send you a text, they being the site, will send you a text with a six-digit number or what have you. And so a lot of people are now moving towards the Google Authenticator app.
Right, but and that's another form of two-factor authentication. You know, there's also an argument, and I sometimes argue it as well, when that one-time password isn't really something that you have, like the app or that random-generated number key fob. It actually, as soon as a human reads it, it becomes something you know. And if it becomes something you know, an attacker can steal that from you. And so there's also an argument to be made, is it really something you have or something you know? Regardless, it does make life harder for an attacker. And I can tell you that a lot of organizations and a lot of applications that you use on a daily basis add other layers of authentication, such as behavioral authentication or behavioral biometrics, where they will look at things like how do you move your mouse or how fast do you swipe your finger on your phone in order to understand, is this really the person who is claiming to be? So there's also a lot of authentication happening on the background with zero, it's called frictionless authentication, without the user even knowing about it.
Which is all a good thing, okay? Because we don't want the hackers and scammers and bad guys in our stuff. All right, let's go to number two, pen tester. What is a pen tester?
So again, here, a bunch of different words that I want to throw out and I'll briefly explain. So you might have heard pen tester, red team, blue team, purple team, threat hunter. These are all different groups or subgroups within a security team. Pen tester is somebody who works for an organization and tries to find out if there are any vulnerabilities in their systems. And let's make it clear, it's not somebody external from the company unless the company hires an external pen tester that does this maliciously. It's somebody who tests the systems to see, are we vulnerable in any way? And then works with the blue team or the defenders in order to patch these vulnerabilities. Now, that's just one layer of defense. You might have heard red teaming. Red teaming is another form of testing where a group within the organization will try to hack into the systems and stay inside and see if they can do any theoretical damage in order to simulate what an attacker would have done. And that's another way to identify different vulnerabilities, not necessarily software vulnerabilities, but maybe these are more process or human vulnerabilities. And then you have things like threat hunter. Those are the people who will say, okay, let's find evidence of something happening on my network and kind of claw the way back or move backwards from that and try to find where it started from. To make it kind of all make sense, I'll tell you from my experience, unfortunately, I had to deal with a flooding in my house. So let's equate that into a house getting flooded. A pen tester is somebody who will stand outside your house and try to flood it and see if there are any holes. A red team person would be the one who will try to sneak into your house and break something in the water system and let it leak and see if you ever find out about it. And a red team would be like threat hunter would be like the person coming to your house and saying, hey, there's a little bit of water here. Let's see what the origin is and how it got in here and see if we can patch it that way.
So do you hire these pen testers?
That's a good question. A lot of the bigger companies would have pen testers and even threat hunters and red teams within their companies. Unfortunately, medium to and small businesses don't have the budget for it. Also, it's very hard to find these people and keep them because they're in extremely high demand and with high salaries. And so they would hire external advisors or external pen testers and red teamers to come in and help them with this process. There's also software companies that try to emulate and simulate what an attacker would do in your network and do these types of operations automatically.
Okay, number three. That's all good stuff, Ite. BYOD, yes, bring your own device, which that's when you bring your laptop, your phone into an organization, your organization, or maybe you're using it at home now because of the pandemic. But the whole idea is that your device needs to be as secure as it would be inside the office, right?
You hit the nail on the head. I couldn't say it better. And again, you mentioned the most important thing is BYOD used to be this, hey, you know what, you can bring your own device connected to the network and we'll secure it with some software or not. Today, it's not even a question. With working from home, everybody's bringing in their own devices, sometimes whether they even know it or not, or even if their organizations know about it or not. Because if you're connected to a network that might have a device that's, you know, a Wi-Fi device or a printer or whatever it is, and now you're connecting to your corporate network with these devices on the same network, you're bringing a lot of stuff in. And so, yes, just as you mentioned, I think that was the most important thing I was going to say this, it is this device has to be as secure as if it was in the corporate organization network.
So how do you make sure that your device is secure? I mean, and let's say that you are a small business and you don't have a so-called IT person or IT genius, as I like to refer to John and Jeremy in our studios, because they are amazing.
So if you are a small business and you're trying to secure a device, there's very common, you know, best practices to secure devices, from the basic things like keeping them all patched, making sure there's security software on them, and so on. But today, a lot of organizations are moving from that to something that we'll discuss in a couple of minutes, that is an approach or an architectural approach of a zero trust. Because there are a lot of problems. It's not just with the computers themselves. It's also with the inherent trust that we provide to third parties and companies that we have and rely on for day-to-day activity.
Now I want to pin in that. Zero trust security models are a great way to protect your business. I actually have a really funny story coming up about my own company, our network, and it stars my husband, and it just goes to show you why zero trust models can make the world a difference. You're also going to learn more about how you can deal with data breaches and just where the terms black hat and white hat hackers come from. Okay, I'm going to give you a hint. These terms come from old cowboy films, so stay right where you are.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Phishing attempts are common. Companies are constantly dealing with this problem. So are you and me, right? I mean, but what exactly is a phishing attempt? Just so that we're on the same page, that's when criminals pretend to be someone in your company. Maybe it's from a company that you do business with or not. But if you fall for the phishing email, you're toast. So tell us more about that, Itai.
So while it is challenging, I would say for the basic level, there's some good best practices out there. But we're moving to a much more secure approach today in ZTNA.
Yeah, you know, and it's really interesting because a lot of companies are doing now what's called penetration testing, which is what you already spoke about without necessarily using those words. But we actually did that at the studios because we wanted to see, like, if somebody got a phishing email from Gmail, who would actually fall for it, okay? So Jeremy sent it all out, and he said, okay, we had two people fall for it. And I'm like, who are they? He goes, well, I'm not really supposed to say, but I'll tell you. Okay. Because, you know, like, you own the place. I'm like, yeah, I want to know who it is because that means we need to do more education. Well, one was a guy who's a little bit older and, you know, so we spoke to him. But the other person was my husband. I'm like, oh my gosh, you fell for a phishing email, you know, asking your password. And so, you know, it doesn't matter what size your company is that you can, there are several websites or a place you can go to set up what's called these penetration testing. Because if you don't know where the vulnerabilities are, then you don't know what you have to fix before something bad can happen, right?
Exactly. Okay, I'll mention this a little bit later, but it's also important that it used to be like, oh, we need to make sure that our VPs are covered. Well, if you look at a lot of the breaches that we see today, the breach didn't happen from some executive. It came from somebody a little bit lower in the ranks who clicked on that phishing email. And due to the fact that we don't have zero trust today and that people are given access to a lot of resources that they may not necessarily need, attackers take advantage of it. But I'll discuss a little bit later.
All right, let's go into white hat and black hat hackers. Of course, you know, this actually comes from those old spaghetti westerns where the good cowboy wore the white hat and the bad cowboy wore the black hat. And it's pretty much still kind of the same thing, but now we're talking more about technology.
Yeah, so white hat and black hat, and now let's start with the term hackers. I know some people will fight and die on the hill for this definition, but hackers does not mean a bad guy. Hackers are people who try to play around with technology, push the limits, see if they can have the technology do something that it's not supposed to do. Not just computers, you know, vending machines. If you're familiar with all the very old Loft Industries stories and all those early hacker groups, so it's not necessarily bad people. They were given kind of a bad name, but hackers is, I would argue that a lot of people become hackers as soon as something becomes inconvenient to them. They'll find a way to cheat the system in order to make life easier for them. So white hat is, as you mentioned, a reference to security researchers who work with the law or within the boundaries of the law. They're similar to what we described before, pen testers, red teamers, hackers, whatever it is. They work in order to secure and do the good stuff. Black hat is referred to the criminal side or the threat actors that do these things for whatever it is. Nation state actors. I don't know if we should go to nation state actors, but definitely fraud and online crime. And so it's the constant battle between the black and white hackers, if you want to call it that way. But it's really the attackers, the defenders, those on the side of the law, those who are on the defending side, and it's something that we constantly run into. And of course, there's also conferences named after that, and you'll see this jargon a lot being thrown. You know, this white hat hacker discovered this vulnerability and reported it, or this black hat group actually used the vulnerability and did damage.
All right, so we're buzzing along here, which is all great stuff. Zero trust. We can use that in many sentences for many aspects of our life.
So zero trust is something, a concept. It's been used a lot now. It's not new. It's about, I'd say, almost 10 years old by now. And it has several basic concepts. But in the gist of it is, you know, you can't really trust any device. You have to a device or person or transaction, you have to explicitly verify everything. Where did this come from? It came from all the breaches that we've seen and been exposed to, where attackers actually use the trust. You know, here's a third party who's connecting to me. I know that device or I know that person. They can come into my network. And that's a huge problem. Again, I'm simplifying this. Of course, it's much more deep. There are three core concepts. One talks about always trust, verify, never trust, list privilege access. So even if you are on my network, you don't get access to everything. It's only on a need-to-know basis. And the third one is assume breach, meaning always hunt for stuff that's already on your network. And those three basic concepts are what makes up zero trust, which, as I mentioned, discusses the topics of, hey, you don't allow everybody everything, only give them access that they need, and always verify any transaction or connection, even if you've seen this person, device, process in the past.
And you know, and that's a really good point, because one of the things that we do routinely at the studios is that we evaluate who really needs access to what. And did we grant access to a particular system, file, network, what have you, for a one-time use, but then we forgot to take those privileges back, right? So it's a good idea to periodically to look at your policies, see who has access to files, see if they really need to have access, and it goes beyond just if somebody leaves the company.
Exactly.
All right, number seven, VPN, a virtual private network. It's like an encryption. It's a tunnel, if you will. So as your data is traveling from point A to point B, that somebody can't intercept it.
Exactly. But let me bust some myths that I keep hearing about VPN. I once had a person in a training ask me if VPN means that I'm secure. No, it means that you are private. It doesn't mean necessarily that you're secure. Keep in mind, if you're using a VPN and you're going to a website with malware, malicious software on it, it will still download. It would download it securely, privately, but it, VPN does not necessarily mean security. Now, the problem that we have today, and here I'm going to put together a couple of the issues we talked about, people working from home, right? Bring your own device. So a lot of companies are using VPNs today for their employees and users. The problem is VPNs was not designed for this. It was designed to be used by some of the people some of the time. When I go to an airport, open my laptop, use a VPN to secure my connection, connect to my company's resources. It wasn't meant to be used by everybody working from home all the time. Also, keep in mind, VPN does not equal zero trust. Actually, it's not connected at all, because if you're using a VPN and you're gaining access to corporate or company resources, you're getting access to everything or whatever is granted to you. It doesn't limit you. It doesn't say, oh, you're only on a need-to-know basis. And this is one of the interesting things about the difference between VPN and zero trust. Zero trust is something more logical. Why, if Itai is based in Boston and goes to the Boston office, do I need the same access as a developer in the same office? It doesn't make sense. It has to be granted based on what you need to know and what you need to access. So VPN gives you, as you exactly define it, it secures your connection, you're encrypted, it's private, but it's not necessarily secure access to your resources or secure access to the internet.
And it also doesn't allow your internet service provider to know everywhere you go if you're using a VPN. So if you're concerned about your ISP and tracking everywhere you go and then maybe landing some additional cookies, as, using a VPN is a good way to avoid that.
And while we're on the topic of VPNs, I want to give a quick shout out to one of our sponsors, ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN lets you connect to all sorts of countries, from our neighbors Canada and Mexico to faraway spots in Europe and Asia. So in a way, using a VPN, it's kind of like taking a digital vacation. Long before you ever step foot in a foreign country, your digital footprint says, hey, you've already been there. It's kind of interesting, but personally, I'd rather go on a vacation instead of just using ExpressVPN. But of course, that's just me.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
So far, we've talked about seven pretty big tech cybersecurity buzzwords. So let's move on.
All right, number eight, synthetic content. What is that? What do you mean by that?
That is a big one, because we're seeing more and more of it. And I am hinting towards something which I'll get to in a second, but I'll start with the basics of misinformation and disinformation that we might see today. You see all kinds of data out there that has been manipulated, sometimes in very simple format, like, for example, taking a video and cutting it short. Or, for example, something that I ran into just a couple of days ago, a video of a military operation, and it's the headline of the video says it happened, let's say, in the Middle East in this case, but it actually was something from Europe from about 20 years ago. So that's content that has been changed. Synthetic content is content that was created with things like deepfakes. And actually, we got a brutal reminder just about 2 weeks ago what can happen with synthetic content. There was a fraud of $1 or $5 million, where somebody used a synthetic voice of a CEO to persuade someone in a bank to send money due to a transaction that they claim was happening.
Yeah, that, if it was the same thing, that actually happened, I believe, in Germany, where the guy got a phone call and it sounded just like his boss.
Yep.
And said, listen, we need you to transfer $250,000. And if your boss tells you to transfer $250,000 and you're the CFO, okay, you're going to transfer the $250,000, you know. And so, but it had a red flag. It was a sense of urgency. We need to do this right now. Also, another red flag is that the CEO hardly ever called the CFO at all, nonetheless, just to say, send $250,000. But it's really easy to do synthetic voices now. I think they only need like 4 or 5 minutes of somebody's voice, and then they can totally replicate it.
Exactly. All you need is 5 minutes of somebody's recording, which is really easy to do, either by interviewing them or going even online and finding it. And you're referring to the one case in Germany, but there's a case in Dubai of $35 million. The quarter million was in Germany, but we're talking about $35 million. And this is just the voice synthesis. Now we're going to, we know you were facing the deep fakes that are getting not only more sophisticated and believable, but also easier to generate. And there was a case also this year of the Netherlands government. Somebody joined a Zoom call and they thought it was the Ukrainian, I think, opposition leader. It wasn't. It was a deep fake of them. And so we're in a very interesting situation today where, you know, we used to say seeing is believing. Not anymore.
That's true. All right. Number nine, botnet. Bad, right? Okay.
Yes, botnet, very bad. You run into this definition in many articles. Botnet is simply a way of describing a set of computers that has been controlled by someone. How does that happen? People get infected by a virus, a piece of malware. The attacker now has access to their computer, not necessarily even access, but has a certain level of control over those computers. They are his. In some terms, it's called his zombies or botnet. What can you do with a botnet? A lot of different things. Some botnets are used to commit financial fraud. Some botnets, one of the most well-known ones, the Mirai botnet, didn't even target computers. They targeted home IP cameras. Because these IP cameras have an IP and they're online, the attacker used all these devices, hundreds of thousands, if not more of that, in the Mirai botnet, to actually launch a DDoS, a denial of service attack, against the internet and nearly took down the internet. I think they took down several of the DNS servers. So that's a botnet. It can be used for many different things. And if you go into the criminal underground and investigate there, you'll see people sometimes sell different botnets of different sizes.
So how much is a botnet?
I haven't inquired into the numbers lately, but actually you don't buy them, you rent them. And so the costs, a little bit back when I looked into it, were several thousands of dollars. It also depends if the botnet is distributed or localized, because for somebody, for example, who wants specifically to target or commit fraud in, say, Italy, an Italian botnet is much more valuable than just computers spread all around the world.
Okay, finally, number 10. This is a big one. Oh, boy. Vulnerability and exploits versus computer glitches, as so many companies like to say. It was just a glitch in the system, I swear. What happened?
Okay, so you'll read about these terms as well, vulnerabilities, exploits, patching. I'll start off with a sentence that I learned early on in my security career. Not every software is vulnerable, not every vulnerability is exploitable, and not every exploit is usable. But when these things do align, you know, then comes trouble. What do I mean by not every software is vulnerable? If I write a piece of code that just types to the screen, hello, 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 endlessly, it's probably not exploitable. There's not much you can do with it. Now, let's say we have a piece of code that actually has a vulnerability in it, has something that you can do. Well, not every vulnerability can be exploited, because if I have a vulnerable piece of code, but it's in my own computer, locked in my room and not connected to the internet, such as, and I'm not just saying this, you know, some financial systems are just like that, then you can't really exploit it. And then not every exploit is usable. Let's say I find a piece of code and it's vulnerable and I can exploit it if all it does is make, for example, the computer crash instead of me being able to steal money from somebody's account if I'm an attacker, then it's not really usable. But these are the kind of the building blocks for a breach that you sometimes read about, right? There's a system that may be unpatched. You know, it has a vulnerability in the code. The vulnerability is known, but you didn't patch it. You didn't update it. That's why, hey, always update your systems, operating systems, phones, whatever it is. When there's something comes out, patch it. Because if it's unpatched, it's very easy for attackers today to scan the internet and find these unpatched systems and then try to exploit them and then use that exploit to commit, you know, whatever it is they want to do.
And so is there anything we can do aside from updating our systems and having great security software, using a VPN? Is there anything else we can do as far as just like common sense rules, right? I mean, don't open attachments, don't click on links, you know, check the web addresses, don't respond to any phishing emails or spam text messages. I mean, there just seems to be so much that people really need to be aware of.
It is. And, you know, and the, as the more we grow aware, also the attackers grow aware of what we know and try to overcome it. I'm sure most of us would not fall for the early, very early phishing attacks. But today they're crafted. They're much better looking. There's better grammar in them. And like you said, one of the things they like to do in many cases is a sense of urgency. They also always use different types of social engineering techniques and ways and psychological ways to kind of affect the person to do whatever they want. A lot of it, as you mentioned, has to do with common sense. It has to do with, you know, like you said, don't click on stuff you're not familiar with. You're getting, for example, an email from the bank. The bank will never send you an email, but you know what? You think they did? Don't click on it. You know, call the bank or log on to their website. You type in the URL. Don't click on it and see if there really is a message waiting for you or whatever it is. So it has to do with a combination of two. And I think the software that we're starting to see today, along with some of the technologies that we mentioned and some of the concepts that we mentioned, help us, you know, get better at it. There's always going to be vulnerabilities in people, processes, or technology, but we're, no pun intended, we're trying to patch these along the way and try to make our environment much safer.
So Itai, before we let you leave, tell us more about Cato Networks and tell us what you guys do and tell us how we might get in contact with you.
Sure. So Cato Networks is the world's first SASE platform. SASE stands for Secure Access Service Edge. And we actually provide networking and security to organizations. It's a converged solution, which allows companies to get a cloud-native solution that includes both security and networking. It's something relatively new, but if you read about it, it's getting a lot of traction. And it's actually a pretty amazing approach to securing systems. Our website is catonetworks.com. I'm on LinkedIn as well. Happy to answer questions and always happy to be on the show with you, Kim, and share the knowledge.
Itai, you're amazing. Thank you for spending so much of your time with us and your knowledge. And when you come up with 10 more terms, you give me a call back, all right? Okay.
We'll do that.
All right. Thank you. And have a great holiday.
Thank you. You too.
All right, Smarty Pants, now with your new techno wizardry, let's see if you get this joke. Where did the hackers go when they escaped? I have no idea. They just ran somewhere. Okay, I'm trying to make this podcast entertaining, but if you learn just one thing, do us right. No ghosting. You know what that means, of course. Ghosting is abruptly cutting off contact with someone without giving that person any warning or explanation. So that means if you are checking out our social media feeds, but you're not following us, well, then you're ghosting us, and you don't want to do that. So on Instagram.com/KimCommando, hit that big follow button, Twitter.com/KimCommando, and I know you're so smart, Facebook.com/YesKimCommando. And while I'm still on the shameless self-promotion, I want you to leave a great 5-star review and say a few kind words about our podcast wherever you get them. It helps other people say when they're checking out podcasts, hey, I'd like to listen to that too. Thanks a ton. And if you have any comments about our podcast, you can send them to podcasts@commando.com. But you better be nice because, well, a whole slew of people in the studios are going to see that email. Once again, it's podcasts@commando.com. And thanks for listening.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger. Because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.